At 2 or 3 in the morning, after leaving the Englishman, Hannah walks through the garden towards the sapper's hurricane lamp. Absolute darkness between her and the light. But she knows every shrub and bush in her path. Sometimes she cups her hand over the glass funnel and blows out the flame, and sometimes she leaves it burning and ducks under it and enters through the open flaps to crawl in against Kip's body, the arm she wants, her tongue instead of a swab, her tooth instead of a needle, her mouth instead of the mask with the codeine drops to make him sleep. She folds her paisley dress and places it on top of her tennis shoes. The tent and the dark woods surround them. They are only a step past the comfort she has given others in the temporary hospitals in Ortona or Monterchi. Her body for last warmth, her whisper for comfort, her needle for sleep. But the sapper's body allows nothing to enter him that comes from another world. A boy in love who will not eat the food she gathers, who does not need or want the drug in a needle she could slide into his arm as Caravaggio does. How much she is in love with him or he with her, we don't know. Or how much it is a game of secrets. As they grow intimate, the space between them during the day grows larger. She likes the distance he leaves her, the space he assumes is their right. She learns all the varieties of his darkness, the colour of his forearm against the colour of his neck, the colour of his palms, his cheek, the skin under the turban, the darkness of fingers separating red and black wires, or against bread he picks off the gunmetal plate he still uses for food. She loves most the wet colours of his neck when he bathes, and his chest with its sweat which her fingers grip when he is over her, and the dark, tough arms in the darkness of his tent, or one time in her room when lights from the valley's city, finally free of curfew, rose among them like twilight and lit the colour of his body. Later she will realize he never allowed himself to be beholden to her, or her to him. She will stare at the word in a novel, lift it off the book and carry it to a dictionary. Beholden, to be under obligation. And he, she knows, never allowed that. If she crosses the 200 yards of dark garden to him, it is her choice. And she might find him asleep, not from a lack of love, but from necessity. To be clear-minded towards the next day's treacherous object. He thinks her remarkable. He wakes and sees her in the spray of the lamp. He loves most her face's smart look, or in the evenings he loves her voice as she argues Caravaggio out of a foolishness, and the way she crawls in against his body like a saint. They talk, the slight sing-song of his voice within the canvas smell of their tent, which has been his all through the Italian campaign, which he reaches up to touch with his slight fingers as if it too belonged to his body, a khaki wing he folds over himself during the night. It is his world. She feels displaced out of Canada during these nights. He asks her why she cannot sleep. She lies there irritated at his self-sufficiency, his ability to turn so easily away from the world. She wants a tin roof for the rain, 2 poplar trees to shiver outside her window, a noise she can sleep against, sleeping trees and sleeping roofs that she grew up with in the east end of Toronto, and then for a couple of years with Patrick and Clara along the Scutamata River and later Georgian Bay. She has not found a sleeping tree, even in the density of this garden. Kiss me. It's your mouth I'm most purely in love with, your teeth. And later, when his head has fallen to one side, towards the air by the tent's opening, she has whispered aloud, heard only by herself, "Perhaps we should ask Caravaggio. My father told me once that Caravaggio was a man always in love, not just in love, but always sinking within it, always confused, always happy. Kip, do you hear me? I'm so happy with you, to be with you like this."